how do you figure out innovation in a company? I feel like you need to have a system that inherently incentivizes people to be able to behave in that way.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. So this week, we're going to speak to someone who's doing, I think, fascinating work. Jenny Harold is the Chief Product Officer at GTM Hub, a company that offers the most data-driven OKRs platform. And in case you're not familiar with OKRs, it stands for Objectives and Key Results. It's a framework for defining and tracking objectives and their outcomes. Larry Page, the CEO and Alphabet and co-founder of Google, has said about OKRs, "They have helped lead us to 10x growth many times over. They've helped make our crazily bold mission of organizing the world's information perhaps even achievable. They've kept me and the rest of the company on time and on track when it mattered the most." And given that OKRs have their origins in the tech world and that no one really builds the future without a system in place, I wanted to talk to Jenny about OKRs and her approach towards innovation. Side note, we spoke at Web Summit back in November, hence the background chatter. Anyway, Jenny's been an entrepreneur in residence at Techstars. She's managed major projects for Microsoft. And we really had a fascinating conversation. So let's jump right in. Welcome to Future Proof, first off. And then as I ask everybody at the beginning, what is your name and where do you work and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Okay. My name is Jenny Harold. Where do I work is Berlin, Germany. And on a day-to-day basis, I lead products. I'm the Chief Product Officer for GTM Hub.
Does everybody ever ask you, like, what does GTM stand for?
Absolutely, all the time.
Okay, cool.
Right, and the long story short, I guess, is the company pivoted at some point, and we thought, well, you know, maybe we help companies figure out how to understand their go-to-market strategy, so GTM. And then what if our data insights were all in one place, Hub?
Yeah.
And then GTM Hub became the name.
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense. I mean, I also wonder how commonplace knowledges of what OKRs are. And I mean, do you get that asked even?
All the time. It's unbelievable. Even within technology. So either I find people who approach us or are looking for this stuff don't find the materials out there, outside of maybe Google, because they actually openly share their methodologies online. And most companies are familiar with, let's say, balanced scorecard methodologies or what KPIs are, or even SMART goals, you know, the specific, measurable, that whole thing, right? And so when they say OKRs, they're like, what is that? It's new. But there are a few companies that do implement it. I would say, I feel like 1 out of 10 actually knows what that is.
It's a term that I've seen on the rise, and right. I don't know if this is like, if you looked at Google Trends, if this would back this up, but just in terms of becoming, just like there was a certain point where not everybody knew agile methodology.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, and then it became a thing, like, how do you not know that?
That's what's, I think, going to happen with OKRs, actually, because how do you figure out innovation in a company? I feel like you need to have a system that inherently incentivizes people to be able to behave in that way or to think that way or to try things, right? And all the other methodologies that I've reviewed so far don't do it, which is why I think Google is highly successful and other companies that adopt it, because it's okay if you don't hit your target. And most people are incentivized to hit their targets, which means that they're going to be very conservative with their work. And so here's OKRs, just like agile methodology, kind of makes sense that, you know, we need to have systems that help us to do things faster and better and more thoughtful and actually incentivize the right things.
So we're recording this at Web Summit 2018, and one of the things that you said to me before we were on a panel together, I was queuing you up to look smart, and I think I did an okay job, maybe you just did a good job being smart despite my best efforts to screw things up. But no, I mean, I thought you said something that was really interesting also about, what was it, the moving fast and break things, and how that's, do you want to paraphrase that? Because I think people will find that really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think Facebook's started it, or at least Mark Zuckerberg, I remember listening to a clip where he said, you know, anymore, we have to move fast and break things, right? And everyone takes that idea, and they seriously are sprinting, and that's why, I guess, in software, maybe that's why they're called sprints, you know, 1-2 week iterations of shipping stuff to customers. But like we had discussed, people don't actually reflect if they broke something that was really valuable or that they need to recover or fix it in any meaningful way. And it almost acknowledges an environment of, I hate to say carelessness because that feels too extreme, but trending in that direction.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I mean, especially when you're trying to essentially invent the future or create it in some fashion, I think it's critical to just kind of look to see what you're doing and being mindful of your actions.
Yes.
And not just moving quickly. That's why I love that you were essentially saying, I feel, you know, move fast and also be mindful, and mm-hmm. you're not going to be successful if you can't marry those two together.
Absolutely.
So, okay, quick lightning round. Mm-hmm. So, we were talking before, it was difficult for me to place your accent, and I think that that's because you've been in a few different places. So where are the places that you have spent your life overall?
Oh, goodness. I was born in Hawaii. I lived in Chicago for a spell. Virginia, Northern Virginia, Blacksburg, Virginia is where I went to college, the Texas-Oklahoma border, Panama City Beach, Florida. I spent some time now in Berlin. My parents are Filipino, so my first language is actually Tagalog, and English is actually my second language, so it's just a blend of stuff.
How about out of all of these cities that you have to visit for work these days, which is your favorite to travel to?
Ooh, that's hard. Is it bad that I kind of like them equally?
No, I think that's fair, because you spend a lot of time in Sofia, which is a nice town.
I think Sofia is really cool because, I mean, it has a different vibe. It's a different culture. And I just really appreciate just really how different it is. Berlin is where I'm home based. London, I mean, it's a mishmash of all kinds of people and architecture and history. And then San Francisco, right? Where, I mean, that's where tech is. I mean, if we were to be honest.
Most of it, yeah,
right?
Seriously.
And so you see kind of the old style Victorian houses juxtaposed against, let's say, more where the tech scene is in SoMa and the financial district, and you just see a different landscape whether you go to the east part of the city or if you're in the Mission. Like, all of them have their merits. I really enjoy kind of exploring the people, the culture, definitely the food.
Oh, God,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
The food.
For sure. Oh, okay, so how about one thing that people who know you only professionally would never guess about you?
I feel like I'm an old soul, like really old soul. The things I enjoy is gardening. Like, I have a rocking chair in my backyard. My husband and I both have a rocking chair. People have joked, you know, why don't you get, you know, the deer head and just mount it against your back wall? We just spend time sitting there together in the evenings. I like to bake, I knit, I cook, I make baby blankets for my friends. I do things.
Do your friends have babies?
Yeah,
or is it just, okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's so,
then it's less weird.
It's less weird. But so, like, I really enjoy just simple things. Like, and most people wouldn't imagine that for me since I'm so adventurous in my career and my profession. And
well, that's actually
speaking engagements.
Yeah, you know. That's actually a good, you know, final lightning round question. If you were not going to work in tech, what would you be doing?
Ooh, probably something in social justice.
Well,
right?
Nice.
There are so many, I don't know, causes that are important for just humanity. And I think it would be so fun to help someone out, a cause out, and watch humanity thrive and overcome something significant. GTM Hub has GTM Hub Gives, and that's an aspect of the company that I really appreciate right now. Effectively, we think the OKR methodology could be applied to anyone, and like personal OKRs, even business ones. And if there's Operation Smile that wants to align all of their people to that vision and actually be able to track progress and be transparent about what's happening, what's working, what's not, for people to feel engaged, for there to be accountability toward the work, I mean, that would be super amazing. And so it's really nice that our company just kicked off this initiative that gives our software for free, so that, I mean, honestly, these social good initiatives can take root and really thrive and hopefully reach their purpose and the goals that they want to achieve.
Yeah, no, I think that's so powerful because I think that, and I'm happy that there's a lot of idealism mm-hmm. and trying to create a better world in some sense in tech. You know, obviously there's a lot of money and a lot of people
for sure.
just kind of doing it for that reason, and it's okay to like both of those things. Mm-hmm. But what do you think in terms of, you know, I guess I'd say areas that, you know, you're following the most from a technology standpoint right now that could impact GTM Hub's mission or just the tech scene in general?
Based on like where I think our product vision is headed, I'm really trying to follow like the AI movement. What does that mean? Like automation is going to be a big deal. Like what does that mean for us? I'm kind of tracking a little bit in kind of the blockchain stuff. I'm less concerned about that. We're going to need to understand how people set goals, how they're achieving them, what they're actually doing. So I think like just data science in general is something that I'm really interested in as someone who previous to this job has spent a lot of time working with data as a data lead. Like just anything in the data space is super fascinating to me. But also being mindful, right? There's privacy concerns and this GDPR thing. So compliance is something I'm thinking about as well. It's kind of loosely coupled with tech.
Yeah, no, it totally
right?
is. I mean,
right?
But and what's interesting to me also about that is that I think that there are a lot of people who are now, and this is obviously relevant to what you do. It's I hear a lot of people who are at least asking me, are the KPIs of yesterday and the things that people are looking to achieve yesterday going to be the types of things that people will be looking to achieve tomorrow? Because we take for granted that even thinking about setting goals as an organization changes over time.
Sure.
And like how many organizations 10 years ago were saying that engagement with their content was actually going to be a key thing that their organization or their department was going to be tracking towards?
Sure.
And now it's a big thing. So are there any types of kind of goals that you see organizations moving towards, especially since that, you know, ties in very well to what you guys do?
Oh, definitely. So actually KPIs are very interesting space. I studied this particular concept a lot and read through material. Absolutely. I think as our industries evolve, then naturally everything that surrounds and supports that industry must also evolve. Now that said, there are kind of basic, I would say, axioms that hold true at any given point in time. So if we were to unpack and seriously think about the components of a KPI, what makes it good? We're going to have leading and lagging indicators, right? The lagging ones are financial in nature, and the leading ones are probably more product-focused. You're going to have like very generic KPIs where, I mean, if you're in a SaaS business, or anybody, right, something that impacts everybody, like what is your revenue? That's a KPI, right? Or something that's more specific to your industry. You're in SaaS. What's your MRR? But the one thing that I think will evolve over time as businesses continue to evolve is the most important to me as a product person, which are the behavioral KPIs, right? What are people actually doing? How am I measuring the value that I'm producing as a software company for that person? And that may change because maybe as I march toward my vision, the thing that I've made that I'm trying to solve has changed. And so can I put a KPI against that behavioral understanding mm-hmm. in a number?
It's interesting because I think that there are a lot of people who don't necessarily understand what a CPO does on a day-to-day basis, you know, and what you focus on. Obviously, you focus on products, right?
Yes.
to say the least. But how would you describe to somebody who doesn't quite get that type of role? Because I feel like they're relatively new. Obviously, there's always been like VP of product, but you know, to have it elevated towards a C-suite role
right.
is obviously, you know, critical in the right sector. So how would you describe it?
The job itself?
Yeah.
I mean, effectively, it is having a seat at the table to defend the customer. Like, seriously, that's the job, I feel like, foundationally, is the customer has a voice, and we are in a business that produces some value for that customer or that user, and our responsibility is to bring that to the table to balance against a CEO who's trying to establish a business, a CFO who's trying to figure out are we making money, a marketer who's trying to say does anyone even know we exist, to sales or, you know, a strategy officer who's saying, like, you know, how do we increase top of funnel, what industries, what's our total addressable market, who's talking about the customer?
It's interesting because I know that there are companies that have chief customer officers or chief experience officers. And in some ways, it's interesting to me that you say that
chief product officer is all really about the customer, because you're right, the product should be all about servicing the customer. That to me is, it's obvious, but yet I feel like a lot of organizations miss that. Like, why do you think that that happens? Like, do revenue targets just, you know, flash in front of somebody's eyes and they forget about the fact that you're not going to actually hit your objectives unless you're, you know, servicing that customer?
Right. I think that someone had mentioned it during our panel discussion that there is an allure to grow in hockey stick, right? And if that's the case, then you are probably going to consider, how do I growth hack this thing? When people, like we had discussed, and you brought up a good point, like, what about retention? What about the core value proposition? What do they come to you for? What problem did you actually solve? And really focusing on retention. That's the long game, which means you need a practical person in a role that has an equal voice at the table to be able to say, this is what we came for. This is what we believed in. This is what this team is building. It's for this product, for these people. Let's connect the two and try to avoid the allure of throwing more money at the top of the funnel and only churning them out, because your product, the core value prop, is just not there, and there's a gap between what you propose as the solution you're actually providing and the actual product itself. There's this gap. The product person is supposed to close that gap between the promise to the customer and what is actually being delivered.
So, okay, given that there's like more of a trend towards CPOs in the market, I mean, where do you see that type of role going, and how? I know it's difficult, you know, because of course everybody wants to say that their own role is incredibly important.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, I just think, like, how do those roles, you think, look 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What type of trajectory do they have? Because just to me, it seems kind of obvious that, yeah, of course you need a CFO. But I mean, do you need a COO more than a chief product officer? I think that there's certain, you know, markets where you would argue that you need the CPO more.
So I actually, it's interesting that you say that, because I've been thinking about this, and my experience has been with previous startups, if it is not your core value proposition, right, then you outsource. Finance is something that could probably be, like managing your finances could be outsourced. Like, you can hire a legal team. I have a feeling that in our future, a lot of these foundational roles that a COO would bring to bear, at least some of them, some other entity will do. Whereas if you're building a product, SaaS or not, if it's consumer facing or, you know, B2B, fine, your core value, you know, what you do, your core competency is to ship a product that brings value. So I feel like if anything, the CPO role is going to continue to maybe garner a little bit more attention and maybe even more power, simply because that's the part that keeps people coming back and generating the revenue that the CEO and the CFO gets to look at.
Well, I also think that people, they gravitate towards brands that stand for something in some way, shape, or form, or who are something. I mean, it's like, if you are not your own product, then what are you? That's
exactly.
Why I hate when companies outsource too much to agencies, to the point that none of the ideas are yours, or
right,
there's no core to your brand or your platform. You need to have some type of core to build off of.
Exactly. I think that's exactly the language that I espouse in my organization. When I talk to other product teams, it's that mentality. It's like, people can kind of sniff it out, right? Like, did you build this, or did you get someone else to help you build it? This is your core competency. What happened?
Yeah, it's funny, just because I know we just have a few more minutes. Very quickly, I was going to say, what are you most excited about that you're working on these days primarily?
The surprising thing is I feel like I've kind of figured out the two personas that I'm going to have to build this product for. And I'm really excited about delivering something that really meets their needs, like, sincerely. That they're doing this work anyway, and it's an optimization game. How can I make it better or faster for them? Because they're doing it anyway. The alternatives to our product are a PowerPoint presentation, lots of meetings, an Excel spreadsheet, documents, reporting mechanisms, all hands, just Slack messages, all of this stuff. Talking about what you're working on, what your goals are in a myriad of places.
I don't know if right? you guys can hear, but it got very loud in the background. I think that's just because people are probably really, you know, groaning at hearing the sound of spreadsheets and PowerPoints as an alternative to something. Because you're right, who wants to live in that when it's an imperfect solution that hasn't been optimized in that way?
There's just so much overhead in reporting.
Yeah.
So much overhead. I mean, imagine if I can give people 20% of their lives back.
Yeah.
At work to do the job, rather than what is my goal? What was the outcome of my work? How? Where do I put it? In what system? And who do I have to explain this to? My boss, my team, my subordinates. It's heavy.
So in a lot of ways, if you do what you're supposed to do, then everybody else has more time to
get
you
back
know,
to work and do
right,
the things
get back
they
to work
want
and do
to
something
do.
Functional.
Right?
Yeah.
They want to code. Let them code.
Yeah. Let them eat code.
Let them eat code.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So that's a great spot to leave it. Wish we had more time, but Jenny, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. This is really fun.
And thank you so much, Jenny, for joining us. I told you guys she was great, right? Make sure to rate and review us if you haven't done so already. That really helps other people find out about this show and how beyond amazing the talented people that we speak to are. But in any case, we will talk to you soon. And in the meantime, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.